telling these tears, go and fall away, fall away. Oh, may the last one burn into flames. Freedom, freedom, I can't move.
What's up, Wisconsin and beyond? I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We have a really special Friday show for everybody today. I am so excited to be bringing back to the show historian Heather Cox Richardson. She's a professor at Boston College, an expert on the American Civil War and Reconstruction, the author of seven amazing books, and the author also of the number one Substack, Letters from an American, with over 1 million subscribers. We're going to talk a little bit about most current events, but also we're going to get into some tax policy, the history of tariffs in America, because there seems to be a lot of bullpucky being flown about or tossed about this. After Heather, and she's going to be with us for an entire hour, I'm also really humbled and excited to have for today's episode of Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money, Fatima Goss Graves. She is the CEO of the National Women's Law Center and one of the co-founders of Time's Up Legal Defense Fund. You're not going to want to miss that. And of course, rounding out today's show, as it is Friday, we'll be joined by Civic Media's very own Terry Barr to talk about what's good, local, and overlooked in Wisconsin. Some good news to send you all off into hopefully a beautiful weekend. But welcome back, Heather Cox Richardson. It's a real pleasure to have you.
Maggie, I am so thrilled to be back here again. And as you know, I could not turn down the opportunity to talk about tariffs because it's not actually something that comes across the radar screen very often.
Well, it is front and center these days. But let's start with, there were a couple of major headlines this week. One that struck me on a very positive note and the other which lit my hair on fire, which seems to be happening all of the time. But I wanted to start with what I thought was a really bit of both historic and good news. And that is that the Atlantic magazine took what for the Atlantic is an extremely unusual step this week and endorsed Vice President Harris for president. This has happened very rarely. Tell us a little bit about why this is so notable, Heather.
Well, it jumped out to me because this is the fifth time in its history since it was formed in 1857 that the Atlantic endorsed a presidential candidate. And it has, in fact, endorsed all the opponents of former President Donald Trump. It also endorsed Lyndon Baines Johnson in 1964 and, crucially, Abraham Lincoln in 1860. And the reason that matters is because the Atlantic rose in the 1850s as part of a new form of media when it felt that the old media, the established media, was too much in the pocket of the elite enslavers, that it had ceased to push back, it had ceased to defend American values. And it was one of many, it was a magazine, and there were a number of newspapers that also formed in that era, including, by the way, the New York Times, the Chicago Tribune, the New York Daily Tribune, that set out to be the voice of people who stood against the slave power. So when they endorsed Lincoln in 1860, in a very long, incredibly, I hate to say it, but dry piece written by a very famous poet, and dear God, he had to show everything he'd ever read. It was a big deal because they said, you know, You old media that say we shouldn't be talking about this stuff and we shouldn't be standing up for American democracy, you're just wrong. People need to stand up for democracy. So they endorsed Lincoln in 1860. And when they did it, when they endorsed Kamala Harris on October 10th, of 2024, they harked back to that. And they said, you know, we're supposed to be a nation of free thinkers. We're supposed to stand up for democracy. We're supposed to care about these things. And they were taking that forward to endorse Harris, but I thought implicit in that was a criticism of the established media today, which really seems largely to give former President Donald Trump a pass on what is really extraordinary behavior. So I thought there was implicit in that a criticism of established media and also a recognition that there's all kinds of new media in this era that might be taking over the scene.
We like to think here at Civic Media that we may be part of that new media wave. Your piece and your reflection on this, struck me as incredibly timely, not just because of the historic nature of the Atlantic's endorsement and the fact that they explicitly hearkened back to their endorsement of Abraham Lincoln, but because there seems to be this recycled, I believe, untrue story or line of attack levied against Vice President Harris that she's, quote, not taking interviews. And excuse me, you dug into this a little bit, utilizing this historical context of old media versus new media. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, and actually a lot of the examples I used in that piece were from Noah Berlatsky, who was writing in Public Notice a few days before that, or maybe even that day. But I don't think what he was saying was unique. There has been this idea that somehow Vice President Kamala Harris has not been having public interviews. And first of all, you know, nobody paid a lot of attention in the established media to the 3.5 years in which she has been in office. And that's pretty normal because you don't really pay a lot of attention to the vice president unless something really bad happens. So it's kind of the job of the vice president to be invisible. But she was actually very, very active in those 3.5 years. She was traveling all over the world, made a lot of appearances in places like Indonesia, pushed a lot of the administration's policies, and then domestically really spoke for younger people and women who cared about reproductive rights. She had this tour around the country that was like a rock star tour, and also was always at the forefront of protecting the idea of equality before the law. So when the Tennessee Three got tossed out of the legislature in Tennessee, she was there. She was one of the first, yes. Not one of, she was the first national person there. So she has very much been there, even though that didn't get a lot of coverage. If you were paying attention, you knew that she was not some cipher. She's always been there. But since she became the Democratic nominee, since President Joe Biden decided he would not accept the nomination, she actually has done a lot of established media. She's done CNN with Tim Walz. She's done 60 Minutes. She's, you know, she's been out there. But she's also done a lot of media that is not traditionally thought of as the established media. So the National Association of Black Journalists, she did a big interview on a Hispanic channel. She has been very much out in the world, but not in places that necessarily have that ring of we've been here for a century. So the Call Her Daddy interview, I thought was absolutely fabulous, a podcast for a younger generation. She did The View, she did Stephen Colbert, she did Howard Stern Show. And just those four things alone reached about 25 million people that aren't necessarily reading CNN or the New York Times. And I think it's been a deliberate strategy on her part, in part because those established places like the New York Times are really looking for a gaffe. They're looking for something that will get clicks. And the others are looking more for her to explain what she's doing to a different population. So I think it's been deliberate, but I also think it's a reflection of where the media is right now in what seems to me anyway to be a pretty dramatic split between old media and a new media with a different kind of agenda. So it's a really interesting moment to be watching.
Indeed, I have been troubled since Donald Trump's golden elevator appearance about the kid gloves that apparently that I think are used very frequently by mainstream media. It's only really been, in my opinion, in the last couple of years where you see interviewers asking the tougher questions and trying to follow up. Again, in my opinion, it stands in marked contrast to a lot of what you see even in British journalism from their very mainstream outlets, the BBC included, where follow-up questions and tough interviews are to be expected, as are fact-checking. All of this, of course, they're talking about Kamala Harris not doing these interviews. Donald Trump, of course, failing to appear on 60 Minutes because he was whining about potentially being fact-checked. It seems such a double standard. And this fact that you included in your reflection yesterday in Letters from an American, Heather, I thought was really emblematic of this phenomena that we're talking about. You wrote this, that Matt Gaetz of the media watchdog Media Matter reported that the five major newspapers, LA Times, New York Times, USA Today, and the Wall Street Journal, as well as the Washington Post, produced nearly four times as many articles about Democratic candidate Hillary Clinton's email server in 2016, and the week after then-FBI Director James Comey announcements Than they did about the unsealing of the new Jack Smith indictment of Donald Trump for fomenting an insurrection and interrupting the peaceful transition of power.
It's crazy. It's crazy. And I mean, I think there's a number of reasons for that, but it really stands out because, of course, the final report on Hillary Clinton's use of an email server, which almost nobody saw, and it was a little bit hard to find. You had to go in through Chuck Grassley's portal from his website.
Yep.
Said, you know, basically there were the usual slips, but there was no crime committed. There was no there. And yet that got four times the coverage of the new indictment or the new version of the indictment from the grand jury, a different grand jury than the first one that indicted Donald Trump for trying to overturn an election and erase American democracy. And, you know, I, like you, there's so many things that seem like they are earth-shattering.
Yes.
That don't seem to get any coverage. And I don't know how people think, I don't know how journalists, not even journalists, I don't know how editors think that voters are going to be able to make good decisions about the future of the country if they don't have in front of them things like, you know, the guy's a criminal, has been found liable for sexual assault and, you know, found guilty on 34 counts of crimes. I mean, I don't know how you're supposed to figure that one out.
Yeah, a lot of false equivalency going on. We're going to dig into one of those absolutely incredible headlines that seem to appear and then disappear as if it wasn't really a big deal that dropped this week with my very special guest, Heather Cox Richardson, historian and professor at Boston College, author of the Substack, Letters from an American. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. We'll be back with more in just a moment.